The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
The Irish Academy of Engineering has published two reports yesterday calling for significant changes to our energy security planning, which fly in the face of our legally binding commitment to eliminate carbon emissions. And to talk about all of this, I'm joined now by a member of the Academy, the chair of the Energy and Climate Action Committee, Eamon O'Reilly. Eamon, good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Pat. Good morning to you.
Now, can you set the scene for us in terms of the likely energy shortages over the coming years because of what's happening with the war on Iran?
I suppose it is impossible to predict what's going to happen. I think that's the essence actually behind our reports. There is enormous uncertainty in the future. There has been enormous uncertainty in the past. And it is a bit like house insurance. If you can get along hopefully through your life without insuring your house, all of a sudden there's a fire and you regret not having house insurance. Energy security is like that. So for a country like Ireland with such a huge dependence on fossil fuels, 83% of our energy, it's imported, it's gas and it's oil, and we have zero energy security stores that we can access when we need to in the worst circumstances for gas. We have a lot for oil, for heating and for transport, but we've also almost nothing for electricity.
Now, often it'll be pointed out by Airgrid and others that sometimes more than 50% of our electricity on a given day, where there's a bit of wind and the sun is shining, 50% of it comes from renewables. And now, that's fine. And with battery storage, that might kind of see us through, but we're by no means there yet.
We certainly aren't. And as you mentioned, Airgrid have a standard that they have to adhere to. Three hours loss of load expectation. What that translates into is 99.97% certainty that Airgrid can provide all of the electricity needed for all of the demand throughout the year. So at that level of supply obligation, you have to make sure that you're able to meet all of that demand. And every year in the winter, they come out and say how they're ready to do that. Yeah.
Now we keep hearing about how well wind does in, you know, wintry, some windy days. However, a lot of the energy that's consumed is consumed for heating, boilers and so on and so forth. And that is not going to change really that quickly, is it?
It isn't, Pat. And there is very frequently in discourse, the terms electricity and energy are used interchangeably, and they're definitely not interchangeable. So about 80% of the energy that we use is in the form of fossil fuels. It's the petrol or the diesel in transport. It's the gas heating your house. It's the kerosene heating in rural Ireland away from the gas network. So only about just over 20% of the energy we consume is in the form of electricity.
Yeah, and even if you get half of that generated by renewables, the other half is still using fossil fuels.
The other half is still using fossil fuels.
So we have a massive dependency on fossil fuels, even looking forward and looking at our commitments. We're not going to hit those targets, are we?
Almost certainly. Look, I'm not going to forecast the future, but I wouldn't need long odds to bet that we will not be net zero by 2050, nor next or nor near it. It is amazing, and it's bonkers, to be honest with you, that we have something set in law that we simply can't do.
There are a few, I suppose, salutary lessons we can learn. You will remember, as I do, the oil crisis of the 1970s, and you'd queues outside garages, you'd garages saying, regulars only, limited the amount, you know, you could have 2 gallons of fuel or whatever it was to get you by. That's one thing. We also remember what happened when Russia invaded Ukraine and the decision to no longer depend on Russian oil and gas.
If we take those two instances that you mentioned, going back to the late 1970s, early 1980s, that is precisely why Moneypoint Power Station was built, and was built as a coal-fired power station. It had a big yard outside it that could store enough coal to keep the biggest power station in the country running for 90 days at full belt. That middle of last year, the decision was taken to stop that, to stop burning on coal.
In the meantime, Germany has had to start burning coal.
Well, Germany's energy policy has obviously been a little bit suboptimal, to put it mildly. They stopped nuclear. That immediately meant they had to go to coal. In order to get off coal, they built up a big dependency on Russian gas. That's come back and it has bitten them.
And so they're burning coal again.
Oh, they have to. I mean, I think that's the key point, Pat. In the final analysis, you have got to keep the energy flow that allows people to live their lives, businesses to operate, etc. And when it comes down to the crunch, if the final decision is we should burn a bit of coal, we are saying in the Academy definitively we should be prepared to do that and have the coal stocks in place.
Now, you're engineers, you love engineering, therefore, is this not our version of drill, baby, drill?
No, it's not, because the coal-fired station at Moneypoint was not being operated all that much. It was there as generation of last resort. So you might remember back in 2021, there was a little crisis coming into the winter. There could have been shortages. What did the government do, or what did AirGrid and the regulator do? They immediately went out and they procured a whole load of temporary, they call it temporary emergency generation. Mm. So there's quite a lot of that has been built. There was a scheme put in to keep Moneypoint retained available in extremis. So all we are saying is keep it available for longer than 2029, which is what the current plan is. Keep it for at least a decade. If you can manage to keep it there on coal, keep it on coal.
Now, the question of a huge yard to store the coal that would give you 90 days supply back then, it wouldn't be anything like 90 days now, the same amount of coal, because we use far more energy than we did then. What about running it on oil, on heavy oil? Would that be any better? Do we have the capacity to keep Moneypoint going on heavy oil?
Well, when they shut it down on the coal, it is available to operate today on heavy fuel oil. They've got two tanks down there. ESB, in fact, got planning permission to build another two tanks. So what we're saying, if it's not possible, if it's too late at this stage to go back on coal, at least build those extra two tanks. And that would give you about 20 to 22 days of capacity to run the station at full output, as and if needed.
Now, that fuel oil that would be stored down there, that could be seen as part of a strategic supply, isn't that so? And it might never be used.
Well, that is the point. So an awful lot of the stocks of oil held by Nora for transport and heating, to back that up, those don't get used. And just in the last week, actually, the extent of the crisis can be measured by Nora are now putting some of their stocks out into the market. So lots of countries with these strategic stores are doing that to make sure that the oil is available that we need.
Now, what about using those facilities in Moneypoint to store LNG? I mean, there was a proposal to build a big LNG storage facility, which I think Eamon Ryan then nixed, and I'm not sure where that stands now, whether there will be one. Is there the capacity, the possibility of doing that at Moneypoint?
There would be the capacity, but there is actually... It is with Planol at the moment. So there is a proposal for a request for a planning permission for an LNG plant on the other side of the Shannon Estuary with Planol at the moment. If Planol give that the green light, there's an opportunity that might be built. Government has decided that it itself is going to, through GNI, build an LNG plant just down the shore from Moneypoint, in fact, not too far from it, which is far too small for the country's needs. So the next report that the Academy will be putting out is one which is going to look at LNG and the actual needs that the country has. They are far greater than what government is currently proposing. They're more akin to what was proposed.
Who's advising the government then? I mean, if the Academy in its wisdom is saying you don't have enough, you're not planning enough, who is telling the civil servants in government and the department, the ministers and so on, that they're planning for enough when they simply don't have enough?
I think what's happening, what happened in the past, was the politicians are telling the civil servants what they do want to see happen. The civil servants are employing foreign consultants and giving them terms of reference which are carefully prescribed to them to give the politicians what they want. Our energy policy in this development has been a real mess. So the reports we're putting out are not intended to be critical of any of the state companies. The state companies are actually have a dead hand on them. The dead hand of awful energy policy. And that's what needs to change, Pat.
Now, many people listening will say, look, offshore wind out in the Atlantic is on the way. Now, I have this kind of disaster movie scenario in my head all the time of one of the big windmills tethered to the seabed somehow or floating breaks loose and makes its way towards the Irish coast, and we have the makings of a massive disaster as this thing, or maybe a number of them, hit our shores. But supposing they can get over the technical challenges of the high seas in the Atlantic, how long before that becomes a reality?
Well, but by the time they might get to that, there will be an awful lot of more offshore wind built, fixed bottom offshore wind, not floating. So at the moment, there's about 3,500 megawatts which have state contracts in place. So Codling, for example, ESB have, 900 megawatts off the southwest coast. And there's possibly up to 20,000 more coming after that. By the time you've built all of this fixed bottom offshore wind, I doubt if Ireland can ever need much more than that.
Okay, now what's the timescale on that fixed offshore wind?
We're supposed to have 5,000 megawatts by 2030. We clearly won't. We might have it by 2035. It could even go on longer.
So you're saying money point is needed until 2035, say?
We will need always some form of generation where you burn something as the generation source of last resort. We're saying Money Point has the advantage on coal that you can't get a large stock of coal into a yard.
What will it do for us in terms of our bills? If you have that kind of backup, and the possibility that you can manage, you know, if you're being blackmailed by the international markets and you've got this kind of backup, what would it mean for our bills?
My sense, whatever. How costs feed into bills is a completely different discussion, but I think the cost of running Money Point on coal will be lower than the cost of procuring brand new gas turbine power plants, which is what Airgrid are planning to do.
Gas is clean, coal is dirty.
It depends on how what you define. Both of them are greenhouse gas emissions. Coal probably has about twice the greenhouse gas emissions of gas. But if you're not burning it all that often, it actually doesn't matter. Money Point is an old plant. It's 40 years old. It's fully depreciated or should be fully depreciated. The cost of running Money Point should not be anywhere near as high as a brand new plant that you might procure.
Last question. Modular nuclear. The technology has changed since the Carnsore Point protests and all of that debate. The possibility of molten salt reactors, which are self-limiting, which don't have the dangers of a Fukushima or whatever. What about those technologies?
I think what we should be doing is keeping an eye on Darlington in Ontario and Canada, where they're building, Ontario Power are building 1,200 megawatts of GE Hitachi SMRs. Keep an eye 70 miles from here in Wilfa, where Rolls-Royce are doing the design now for 3,470 megawatt SMRs. They're not molten salt. They're not fancy technology. This is old boiling water and pressurized water technology. Keep an eye on those. And Ireland should be readying itself today to be able to deploy that technology in 10 or 12 years' time, whenever it proves itself, if it does.
If it does. And then the build time is probably a decade anyway, isn't it?
100%, Pat. Yeah.
All right. Eamon O'Reilly, thank you very much for joining us. Eamon is chair of the Energy and Climate Action Committee of the Irish Academy of Engineering.
The Pat Kenny Show. Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.